Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell, Editor-in-Chief of Boat International, and here to help me navigate through all the news from the world of superyachting is Charlotte Hogarth-Jones, our Features Director. Hello, Charlotte.
Hello. How are you?
Not bad. It's been a few weeks since you've been on the pod.
I know. It's good to be back.
So this week, instead of our usual interview, we're actually running a recording of one of the sessions from our recent Explorer Yacht Summit, which was held in Monaco on November the 11th. So the first one, we're going to do a couple of these, and the first one we're running is today, and it's a session that we called New Frontiers, and it was moderated by Sophia, our acting deputy editor, and she looked at, well, the panel really looked at why the yachting community is so obsessed with high latitudes destinations and what might be some of the top new destinations that more adventurous owners are looking at. So she was joined on the panel by Tim Soper, founding partner of EOS Expeditions, a man who really knows what he's talking about, Sasha Williams, director of charter marketing at Camper Nicholson's, and John Krupe, the captain of Dorothea 3, which is for sale now, actually. So Dorothea 3, with John at the helm, did some amazing adventuring. They went everywhere. And he won, actually, he and the owner and the boat collectively won the Voyagers Award at the World Superyacht Awards back in 2019. So this trio had lots to say about the subject of new frontiers and suggesting some new destinations for everything from Papua New Guinea to Greenland. They also touched on some of the complexities in offering charters in remote locations and discussed why more people should consider spending longer on board. I should say at this point that we did have a few issues with the audio. It's mostly fine, but it does jump about in a few places. But I think not enough to upset the flow of the conversation, so you can still get lots out of it, hopefully. Anyway, so that will be running after the data in a little bit. But anyway, Charlotte, Christmas is coming up.
It is.
So I'm going to ask you.
Exciting.
What are you looking forward to seeing in your Christmas stocking this year?
Oh, I don't know. Well, from a boaty perspective, we obviously feature so many beautiful and lovely things, especially in our kind of boat life section where we do more producty things. And they don't go unnoticed. I have to say, I was proofing the jewellery special recently, which should be landing on your doorsteps anytime soon, and there's some very beautiful yellow diamonds in there, which I don't think I'll be getting, but if anyone is listening and wants to send them my way, I'll be very happy to accept them. And there was also, I keep remembering, just as someone who's very keen on their music and is in the market for a good piece, good pair of speakers, I keep remembering when we did that big audio feature earlier in the year, there was this amazing sofa by Elle Acoustics where the whole sofa is essentially a speaker. So it's kind of the ultimate surround sound. And I think if I had a yacht, the idea of kind of sitting out on deck, lovely cocktail in hand, sitting kind of with this incredible speaker surrounding me would be pretty cool. But how about you? You know, you could pick anything from boat. Oh, I also like those Zodiac tenders that everyone goes on about for kind of exploring. Everyone I know that's done really amazing exploring missions say that they were invaluable. So I think they're a good investment, I reckon.
Yeah. You nudged a memory then in that feature. Wasn't there's like what? We did something about walls that are in themselves speakers, right? Aren't they?
Yeah, it was the same piece.
Yeah. I mean, that's amazing technology. So no visible speakers. I mean, effectively, the structure of the superyacht is itself a speaker.
Yeah. I mean, you can see what a nightmare it is for people trying to get the latest tech on board as they're building a project. Because just every year, new stuff comes out that's completely different and miles better than what was there the first year. And you sort of feel like you're fighting against the tide trying to get all this stuff on your boat before it's finished and before it's out of date.
Well, it's the eternal problem, isn't it? You know, big custom boats, you spec, and then by the time the thing's delivered, obviously the AV, well, it never works, number one. I should be very careful. Of course, it always works. There's just a few snags. And, you know, it's often, you know, been superseded by something else. So, yeah, but that's why I think we've got a feature coming up about how to upgrade your boat, right? All the latest stuff you can pack on board.
Yeah, actually, in our Tech Toys and Tenders issue next year, we'll have a really deep dive piece all about how to kind of tech up your yacht. So you're not building from scratch. You've already got a beautiful super yacht, but it's feeling a bit dated. Here are all the fixes you can do, from, you know, quick fixes that take a couple of weeks in the yard to kind of ripping it apart and getting a serious upgrade. So really looking forward to seeing that.
One thing I'm excited about is, I basically told my wife what I wanted for Christmas.
What was it?
Not AirPods, but they are kind of in-ear speak. My trusty headphones, my trusty Sony over-ear headphones, which I've loved and used for years, that have served me very well, have finally started cracking at the seams. So I thought I'd get my wife to invest rather in some in-ear headphones. So I'm quite excited about those.
What you're describing sounds a lot like something from a call centre, the gesture you just did with your hand that people can see. I'm presuming they look significantly cooler than that.
Yeah, they don't. I don't know. I'll let you be the judge when I turn up to the office humming along with these things stuck in my ears.
Okay, well, listeners will be able to tell us if you notice a huge leap in sound quality from January 2022. You'll know that Stu got his Christmas wish.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously, we shouldn't be really recording this podcast, should we? Because we should actually right now at this very second be in Milan. Had everything gone to plan. Obviously, COVID scuppered once again the Superyacht Design Festival, which was due to take place this week. So I've got that slightly kind of left the oven on feeling. It's very strange. We shouldn't really be here. I've been kind of anticipating this week being in Milan for the longest time, but it's a bit strange that we're not.
Yeah, you're right. It's been a weird week. And, you know, it's sad not to be there. I think we were all really looking forward to it and really looking forward to a bit of travel as well. So I'm making up for it by going into the realm of fantasy instead and kind of escaping this whole planet, because we've been looking this week at super yachts and space. So jokes aside, I've noticed a number of super yachts and space press releases kind of creeping into my inbox over the past couple of months, and so have other people. So we've decided to assign our excellent tech writer, Steve May, to the case to actually properly do some digging on these companies and see who's doing the most significant stuff and if they're likely to come off. But you might first ask, you know, what have super yachts got to do with space? But when you look at it, there's actually a lot of synergies between, you know, what both industries are trying to do. There's a lot of knowledge sharing to be had. Both industries are kind of focusing on developing lightweight composite materials. They're looking at advanced battery technologies and hydrogen energy, obviously a huge things in super yachts. So if you look at the new space capsule Neptune, for example, they're hoping that's going to be a zero emission spacecraft, much like we're hoping to see zero emission yachts and jets in the future. So there's a lot of similarities going on there. And actually, Steve spoke to this company that owns Neptune, which is this kind of space capsule, I guess you'd call it. The company is called Space Perspective. And he's done a couple of interviews with them. And they've got this ambitious, crazy sounding goal, but it might just happen, of launching a space experience where owners go up in this capsule to space for a thrilling 6-hour journey above 99% of the Earth's atmosphere. And then they come back down and land on the back of their super yacht. How cool is that?
I'll believe it when I see it.
such a cynic. Well, you know, if it does happen, I know I like to do my good value shout outs. It's unbelievable value, I think. 125 grand to go into space for 6 hours. I think that's a bargain.
I can see owners lining up already to see a rocket land. Burners on.
Yeah, you hope it doesn't kind of smash the end off your yacht. But when you see it, it's a very soft, pillowy looking thing. It doesn't look damaging. Anyway, you know, just to show you, the first test flight was in June and apparently it was picture perfect. Neptune did travel up 108,000 feet and then it splashed down in the Gulf of Mexico, not on the back of the yacht, but in the sea. And a retrieval ship collected everything, the capsule and the balloon, and the landing went perfectly. So maybe it's not as crazy as it sounds, although I admit there's maybe a way to go before we see owners, like you say, signing up to have things crashing into the back of their boat.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not. Like I said, I'll reserve judgment. I want to see this video of the perfect landing. Can you send me that after the podcast?
Okay, we'll try and get a hold of that. But you were saying you'd heard something of SpaceX the other day.
Well, only what I've read in the press, really. That Elon, there was a leaked memo, I think, to his staff. So SpaceX are building this Raptor rocket, and not, you know, things aren't going to plan. He actually called the development of the engine a disaster. And is pushing, he's pushing to do the company to do a space launch once every 2 weeks in 2022 to kind of make the company viable. Otherwise, bankruptcy is a real risk for SpaceX. At least that was the language he used in this internal memo that was leaked. So the vehicle they're developing is called Starship. And one of these things takes 39 of these Raptor engines. And if all goes to plan, you know, if they manage to avoid bankruptcy, which I'm sure Elon Musk will, it will take people to Mars and, well, the moon first and then ultimately Mars. But they want to start taking paying passengers to the moon in 2023 or by 2023. I mean, that's amazing.
That is amazing. I would.
Again, we'll see.
yeah, we'll see. I think, if I've got it right, I think Space Perspective were planning their flights for 2024. But I mean, basically, if you want to go in 2023, you have to sign up now, right? So it's kind of more imminent than you think. But yeah, we'll see what happens. But in the meantime, we'll let you know who's doing what. And if you're planning to go up to space and you're listening and you've signed up with someone or you've got grand plans, get in touch and let us know. I'd be very keen to hear.
Yeah, we could do a podcast interview from space.
Yeah, exactly.
You get good mobile reception up there, I'm sure.
Yeah, all the satellites, got to be.
Well, back down to Earth here in London. We've had a bit of a flurry of super yacht activity. It was quite exciting. There are no fewer than 6 super yachts currently on the Thames, which I have no idea if that's a record or not. We can get the Boat Pro guys to look into it, but it's pretty cool. So 109-metre Bravo Eugenia is currently the biggest. So she turned up the other day. So she's moored at Butler's Wharf in the shadow of Tower Bridge. Our social media manager, Claire, went and got some great photos of her as the sun was dipping down over Tower Bridge the other night. It was a very lovely scene. And just across the river from her is the brand new 40.8-metre Bonetti Phoenix. Then over in Canary Wharf, there's 89-metre Amels. Here Comes the Sun, recently extended, obviously. And 55-metre Moonsand, which I enjoyed a ride on the other night. So they've been attracting plenty of attention over in Canary Wharf. And I must admit, locking into West India Docks the other night as the sun had gone down and all the lights were on in Canary Wharf, it was properly magical. Loved it.
Yeah, I have to say, when we saw these super yachts arriving in London, at first it made me laugh because we're so used to seeing social media footage in, you know, in the States with this amazing sunny blue skies or in the Med. And the super yachts against the very grey Thames is quite a different kind of Instagramming. I'm not sure London was doing its best. But when you see them in the city with all the lights up and you see all the bridges and everything, actually, it's incredible. And it's nice to see a different style of yachting being in the heart of a city instead.
Yeah, it's so nice. And especially when your backdrop is Tower Bridge as well. I mean, it's just so iconic. I mean, it's just one of the, you know, it's a one in a million scene. I think if you can get your super yacht up the Thames and then get a snapper on board, grabbing some shots of you either going through or in the shadow of Tower Bridge, just magical stuff.
Yeah, it's very cool.
So upriver a little bit is the world's largest and coolest super yacht barge, Savvy, which sold earlier this year. Her former owner was, of course, the legendary Peter de Savvy, who I interviewed a while back, who is just a fascinating bloke.
Savvy, what a great name for Peter de Savvy. I think that was so clever. But yeah, he owned Kalisma for a stint, the yacht that I've been sort of endlessly banging on about that belonged to Richard Burton. And he sounds very charismatic and entertaining. I'm sad that I've not met him before.
We've just done the cover lines for the February issue of the magazine. There's a massive Kalisma cover line. So this feature that has been brewing and Charlotte's mentioned a few times will be appearing in that February issue. So do not miss it. It's a really, really good one. And lastly, the 30-metre classic yacht Lillian is down at Richmond, so making up the 6. There you go. 6 of the best on the Thames. Fantastic.
Who needs to travel? There you go. You can just go around London and yacht spot till your heart's content.
It would limit the Boat International travel bill, quite honestly, if everyone
so we've just got the tube, yeah.
Meanwhile, some excellent news came through last week. So the super yacht industry has raised €1 million for the Blue Marine Foundation, which aims to protect 30% of the world's oceans. That's their noble ambition, and they're on their way, certainly with the help of this latest donation. So this all came about from the World Super Yacht Awards, which happened in September in Monaco. So during the awards, Peter Lurssen physically grabbed me and said, "I'll do it." He said, "Stuart, we've got to raise €1 million. We've got to raise €1 million.
It's a good impression.
That's my terrible Peter Lurssen impression. Anyway, so he said, "We've got to raise €1 million for the Blue Marine Foundation." I said, "Oh, okay, Peter, how are we going to do that?" So he said, "Well, I will give you right now. Well, not you. I will donate. I will pledge €250,000 right now." Okay. So then we walked over to where Lars Windthorst was sitting, the new owner of Nobby Skrug. And he said, "Lars, I've just committed €250,000 to the Blue Marine Foundation. Will you do the same? And Lars, without a second's thought, said, yes, absolutely. Okay, so then suddenly you had €500,000. And then the challenge to us is Boat International. So we went on stage, Toby and I, Toby the CEO and said, co-CEO, and said, right, well, Lars and Peter have just committed €500,000 euros to the Blue Marine Foundation. Can we get another €500,000 euros out of this room? Eventually we did, albeit with the help of, you know, Peter ringing up a few very wealthy chums, and an appeal that went out again at the Monaco Yacht Show to their Blue Marine Foundation, members of the Blue Marine Foundation Yacht Club. So collectively, seven more people contributed to raise just over €1 million, which is amazing.
Yeah, he does a lot, Peter Lewson. I know we featured him in the mag before because I think he bought an island, and we bought part of an island. But I've been at one of his Blue Marine events on board a yacht in Monaco, where he was literally kind of coming up to people and saying, I'm not leaving here till you sign my piece of paper saying how much you're going to give me. And good on him, because, yeah, he raises a tremendous amount, I think.
Yeah, he really does. And, you know, and all credit to Peter, he really was the driving force behind this entire endeavor. And the Blue Marine Foundation wouldn't have this €1 million if it wasn't for Peter. His efforts at the World Super Yacht Awards, and subsequently just using his network to raise these funds. And so he said, the yachting industry must realize that a healthy and beautiful ocean environment is the basis not only for the yachting world, but for the whole world. And it is therefore in our interest to protect the marine environment. The World Super Yacht Awards provided a great opportunity to raise money for this worthy cause, and therefore I committed to challenge the audience to match my donation. And they did, and then some. So brilliant work from Peter. Great news for the Blue Marine Foundation, and great news for the world's oceans. And I just wanted to also mention a feature that's gone on the website. It's about, so the digital team a while ago, for a while, have been working on this series of stories about some of the more, the biggest boats that are on hold. Basically, so you do these, you compile these massive lists of the industry, biggest boats here and there, and there's always a few that are on hold that have been in build for what seems like ever. And one of these is a boat called Dream Symphony. So the superyacht nerds out there will know what I'm talking about. 141-meter wood-constructed sailing boat that was started in Turkey some 10 years ago. The keel was actually laid in 2011. And it's not a totally pie-in-the-sky kind of concept or project. It attracted plenty of big names, including Ken Freevock, he of Maltese Falcon fame, and many other boats, and Dijkstra Naval Architects. But, you know, we hadn't heard much from the shipyard in the last few years. We knew the boat was on hold. Some of it had been constructed, but we kind of thought, well, you know, what's the latest? Because news has been so sparse. So we did a little digging. It turns out Burgess have now been charged with trying to find a new owner to take over the project. And it's a pretty wild thing to look at. And the interiors are equally amazing. We've got some visuals on the website, but the owner's stateroom is one of the standout spaces. It's designed over two levels with a spiral staircase and an atrium, and it takes up a huge chunk of the rear of the boat. But if Ken Freevock said the hull is now pretty much complete, so there's a skeleton crew keeping working, keeping the project ticking over, keeping it in good condition, he said. But the search is now on for a new owner. And Burgess said when she does launch, she will redefine superyacht sailing for the modern age in a way that honours the past and acknowledges the future.
Yeah, she's an amazing yacht. It's worth checking out the photos of her on the website. I couldn't believe she was begun 10 years ago, because when you look at the pictures of her, you know, it's incredibly skinny, like quite light wood everywhere. It looks very modern. I wouldn't be surprised if you saw it coming out as a new concept. So, amazing that that design was obviously so ahead of its time 10 years ago and still kind of is.
Yeah, absolutely. So the biggest sailing yacht in the world, as we all know, will be delivered next year, 127-metre Project Y721 at Ocean Co. But this, you know, if it hits the water ever, hopefully it will eclipse that again. 141 meters and made of wood. Amazing.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Very, very cool. Anyway, let's have a mosey through the headlines from this week. And we've each picked out a story. And the one I went for first is the news that the 52-meter Benetti Motiot Vian is now for sale, and the owner is prepared to accept NFTs, or non-fungible tokens, or a major cryptocurrency. The cynic in me wonders if this is just a great way of drawing attention to the boat, because obviously, you know, a boat listed in a crypto or NFT is guaranteed to get headlines.
Well, why do you think, you know, don't support space, don't support cryptocurrencies. This is your list of cynical things Stuart doesn't think will happen in the super yachts. But there have been lots of big art deals done in cryptocurrencies, right? Or at least, again, some attention grabbing ones. So what are your reservations then?
I'm just not quite a believer yet, although some people in the market clearly are. I think Denison said, I saw something on LinkedIn, I think Denison said they've done about 20 deals in crypto this year.
20 is a lot. I'm surprised it's that high, to be honest.
And Denison have had a great year. And then there was a few other stories I've seen kind of floating about the networks. There was something, one story saying there was cryptomania taking over yacht sales, but I think that's probably overstating it a touch. There was also a report, albeit not on our channels, about a digital super yacht called the Metaflower selling for 149 Ethereums, which at today's crypto exchange rate works out at about $650,000. Hideous looking boat, by the way. I think the buyer was sold a real lemon there.
What even is a digital super yacht?
It's a digital super yacht that is fundamentally a non-fungible token that exists in the blockchain, or the record of ownership exists in the blockchain, and that it's in a metaverse called the Sandbox. And so in this metaverse that you have an avatar in, there is a super yacht called the Metaflower, which someone paid $600.
You've gone too deep into this. This sounds like that video game Second Life, where you have a kind of alternative reality. I always associate crypto stuff with kind of vaguely dodgy things, but I don't know whether that's a very old school way of thinking and actually we'll all be using cryptocurrencies in 10 years. I listened to a podcast about a kind of cryptocurrency pyramid scheme, and I think that's put me off them as well, but could be wrong.
Yeah, I mean, time will tell. But I can't help but think this is the kind of madness that results from more than a decade of near zero interest rates and an explosion in the broad money supply. You know, we've seen asset prices going nuts, and now inflation starting to go nuts, and there's quite a lot of cash floating around the system, and, you know, banks aren't doing anything for you on the interest rate front. So, you know, assets are blown up and money finds its way into crazy things like digital super yachts that someone's paid $650,000 for. I'm not a believer, but hey, I might be a Philistine. I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
Well, I've chosen a bit more of a relaxing story for mine. It's the Italian yard San Lorenzo, which has announced the sale of its new flagship motor yacht, the 72 Steel. So no prizes for guessing that it will be built in steel and also aluminium. And it was designed by Zucon International Project. It's due for delivery in spring 2025. And one of the model's major features is that there's going to be a really extensive wellness area to ensure relaxation for all guests on board, which sounds really nice to me. And the yacht has hybrid diesel electric systems, and it's going to be the biggest San Lorenzo to date, so one to look out for. And the buyer was introduced to the yards by Edmiston, who say they look forward to a long partnership together.
Congrats to San Lorenzo and Edmiston on that deal. It's 72-metre San Lorenzo. I mean, if 10 years ago you'd said San Lorenzo are going to build a 72-metre boat, that just wasn't their market at all. But they've just done so successfully at kind of creeping up the size ranges and, you know, selling boats well that, you know, now they're in the 70-metre market, which is, fantastic with San Lorenzo. So congrats to Mr. Perotti for all his success over at San Lorenzo. So let's talk data. And as ever, it's brought to you by Broat. I've done it again.
Broat Pro?
Data is brought to you by Broat Pro, the super industry's leading market intelligence service. So we thought we'd just have a quick look at the brokerage numbers. Since the market shows absolutely no sign of slowing, we're going to look at completed brokerage transactions to November over the last 5 years. As expected, 2021 has blown the previous years out of the water. To November this year, there were 618 brokerage transactions. 618. But, you know, most ever. In comparison, that number in 2017 was 394. In 2018, it was 398. In 2019, it was 365. And in 2020, it was also 365.
Wow.
Yeah,
it's blown out of the water is the phrase there. It's, huge dump.
Absolute nuts. But the cynic in me, again.
Oh, it's another one to add to your list. Space, cryptocurrencies, brokerage sales.
I'm being a bit of a Cassandra today. But I do have a genuine concern about this, and I worry that there's lots of people getting into the market now that will be getting out of the market in 2 or 3 years' time when suddenly they realize that super yachts can be hard work and they're incredibly expensive to run and all this kind of stuff. So hopefully they've come into the market with their eyes open. I certainly hope they have, and we keep these people around for the longest time. The worst case scenario is in 2 or 3 years' time they all get out of the market and suddenly we have a glut of brokerage boats on the out there for sale, which will drive down prices and people will be even more unhappy. So we'll see. I hope that's not the case. I hope they've all been well advised and they stay in yachting for the longest time and keep trading up and become lifelong super yacht owners. So the averages, let's look at the averages quickly. So they haven't moved a lot over the last 5 years. They're always roughly the same. So the average length overall of a boat sold this year is 36.1 meters. The average gross tonnage of a boat sold this year is 332. The average age is 12.68 years. And the average asking price was 10.4 million euros. And there's been, just activity across the market, but particularly in the smaller ranges. I think it's mostly, it's especially pronounced. So in the 24, we'll just compare 2020 to 2021. So in the 24 to 30 meter market, in 2020, there were 135 sales. In 2021, there were 237. In the 30 to 40 meter range, in 2020, there were 134 sales. And in 2021, there have been 217. That's just to November. So obviously, December's to come. All of November and December to come. So we'll see what that number of 618 ends up at. Actually, Sophia and I had a bet. I said it'd end up about 650. She said 640. So
okay,
I guess we'll see who's winning that one.
All right.
So that's it for this week. That's your data and news. Stick around for the panel discussion from the Explore Yacht Summit. And just a note again, the audio does jump about a bit, but I hope you enjoy it nonetheless.
Right, the next session. I'm pretty excited about this. Boats Acting Deputy Editor Sophia Wilson is going to lead the conversation on new super yachting frontiers, looking at why the super yacht community is so obsessed with ice and high latitude destinations. Is it a trend that's here to stay? And with range and self-sufficiency improving all the time, she'll be asking, well, where's next? What are the potential explorer yacht destinations of the future? Joining Sophia, please welcome to the stage Sasha Williams, Director of Charter Marketing at Camper Nicholson, Tim Soper, Founding Partner at EOS Expeditions, and John Kruppi, Captain of the rather lovely Ron Holland-designed Dorothea 3.
Great. Well, thank you so much all for joining me today. And I know Shirley's on a bit of an intro there, but just to give everyone a bit more background. So Sasha is joining us from Camper & Nicholson's with the company managing 65 charter yachts, cruising destinations ranging from Papua New Guinea to Antarctica. She's been behind the promotion of an array of successful charter yachts, including Legend and Lamima. And with the legendary Octopus, now being managed for charter by Campers, she's here to hopefully tell us a little bit more about Octopus's initial cruising plans and more generally about what's getting charter clients excited at the moment. Next, I'm sure many of you in the room know Tim already. He's obviously the co-founder of EOS and has been behind some of the most extreme super yacht expeditions, including Arctic P's record-setting adventure to Antarctica's Ross Sea. Font of expedition knowledge. We're looking forward to him sharing his insight on the explorer destinations of tomorrow. And finally, a huge thanks to Captain John, who's actually flown in from Florida to be with us today. So, massive thanks for that. He won our Voyager Award in 2020 with his trip with Dorothea 3, circumnavigating the world with a sports fish vessel in tow. He's a huge advocate for yacht owners heading off the beaten track and thinking outside the box a bit. So he'll give you his thoughts on where owners should be thinking about now and in the future. Tim, I was wondering whether we could start with you. There's obviously been a surge in interest in Antarctica, as Nick also pointed out in his presentation. I know you're taking bookings as far ahead as 2024-25. Why do you think there is such a demand at the moment?
Well, clearly there is a great interest in remote destinations, which is wonderful. We're very happy about that. It's kind of hard to imagine when Rob and I started EOS 15 years ago that there'd be an event dedicated to our little niche. So thank you, Boat, for organizing that. Thank you for all being here. But I don't think the interest is new. I think people have always been interested in exploring new frontiers. I think perhaps the pandemic has made these places where there's very few local people extra appealing, the wilderness and open space. But I think what's really changed is that these places were sort of the exclusive realm of owners with their own vessels that could go off and make these voyages. And more recently, we see a charter options to go and see high latitude destinations, remote destinations, and the fleet is growing all the time. And a spectrum of different options of size and cost, you know, some quite humble but very capable expedition yachts at one end and some really amazing, super capable, very expensive expedition yachts at the other end. And the spectrum of experiences you can have is amazing. So, yeah, people are realizing these are places you can go and have a charter experience. And that's part of what we do is help sort of package these challenging destinations into something that can be sold as a charter. So I don't think it's new, but I think it's growing, and I think it's a great thing. So, thank you.
And Sasha, would you agree that's what you're seeing from the charter perspective?
Yes, definitely. I think we need owners that want to go to these places and make their yachts available in the most remote corners of the world. And for many of the charter yachts, of course, they also need to see the demand. Now, finally, we're seeing. Especially COVID has helped significantly with that. More and more people looking to go off the beaten track, charter for longer. The logistics have become, in some sense, a little bit more complicated overall, which suddenly makes embarking on a trip like this less daunting because, in actual fact, it's more complicated all over. So, and of course, you have more and more companies like EOS with the local expertise, which can kind of help with the expectation management and a lot of the more complex areas of going to remote locations.
And from a charter perspective, do you think Antarctica still is very much top of the list, or are people starting to think elsewhere?
No, very much so. I think Antarctica is still top of most people's lists. Of course, we always like to mix it up a little bit. I think it's far from becoming the next Saint-Tropez, but you know, it's still somewhere on everyone's bucket list. And fortunately for us, it's an area that you can only really experience to that extent by on a yacht. So I think it's there for some time.
And John, I know you get a bit frustrated sometimes that maybe owners don't think outside the box a little bit more. Where for you are some of the other places, you know, away maybe from Antarctica that people should be thinking about that still have lots to offer?
Yeah, I think that when you don't have an agenda and having cruised areas such as Southern Patagonia and seeing sort of the takeoff points from the southern peninsulas into Antarctica, and you see the charters starting to embark on the Antarctic expedition. And I think back to our travels from, say, Brazil down the coast of Argentina to the Straits of Magellan down to Punta Arenas, Puerto Williams, and then up into Patagonia as a destination, for example. And I see the embarkation of the Arctic expedition begin and then end. And I look at it as a small snippet of our journey, which I see this not only in the southern latitudes, but in the northern latitudes. And I think about how amazing that destination might be, but how much is missed in between, because so many of these journeys are charters, and I don't want to say that they're somewhat scripted, but in order to facilitate a trip that is as complicated as the Antarctic is, you have to concentrate it. So it has to be from here to here to here, and there's so much in between. And as the captain of the Dorothea for 22 years, we got to see it all. And I think that that's a point that you sort of lose in the charter aspect versus the boat owner aspect. is that you don't have to have an agenda, and you can go anywhere you want. And it doesn't necessarily take a, you know, 100-meter expedition boat to do it. It really just takes the mindset.
And Sasha, I know we've spoken about this in the past. How challenging is it kind of managing charter guest expectations? And, you know, they like to have a planned itinerary and everything in advance. And in some of these destinations, it just doesn't work like that, and that's not possible.
I think for the more adventurous, there certainly needs to be some element of surprise and obstacle in the way to really make that good story, and to make it feel like a proper adventure. And then, of course, for others, there's lots of places where you can go where you still have that sense of discovery, but in a very comfortable way. So I really think there's something for everyone there. But one of the biggest challenges we face in terms of constraints is really getting yachts to go to some of the more remote destinations. Many yachts will not want to venture too far from the safety of shipyards, perhaps a more steady income from charter in the more well-trodden routes. So that's probably our biggest challenge.
And Tim, what do you find when you're planning trips? I know a big thing for Ears is that kind of element of surprise.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's the magic of these places is they are unexpected. You don't know quite what you're going to find each day. You're at the mercy of the weather and the conditions. And that's a humbling thing, I think, a healthy thing for all of us to sometimes be reminded that you know, Mother Nature's in charge. And nowhere is that more true than in the high latitudes, because, you know, you really don't know. Are we going to go here today or there today? You have a plan. You have several plans, A, B, C, D, E, F, and you just kind of work your way through them according to the conditions. And along the way, you have those discoveries. And I completely agree. I mean, it'd be much nicer to have months and months and months to see these places. Often we're trying to distill a place like Greenland or, you know, Madagascar, these vast destinations, into a week-long package for a charter. But even in a week, or less, we've had people do even less than a week in Antarctica, you can have these kind of really unexpected moments, and I think that's what makes the magic. Particularly when you get wildlife involved, because wildlife is of course very unpredictable.
And Sasha, I mentioned octopus at the start. Are you able to share where she might be heading this winter?
Yes, so first stop will be Galapagos, which of course I'm sure captures the imagination of most people. And then following on from that, probably staying in the Pacific region, Costa Rica. I mean, she's almost a destination in and of herself. So, I mean, there's really no bounds to where she can go. And I think we'll be looking to all of our clients to see where their imaginations will take her from there.
Tim, do you have any hopes where Octopus might be? Where would you like to put
some clients
aboard?
I'm so thrilled that Octopus is on the charter market, because, I mean, obviously she's a legendary vessel. She was actually one of our first ever clients, and we got a call with about a week's notice to help with a trip through the Northwest Passage when she went through. And I mean, the capability of that vessel in terms of where she can take you, places that very few yachts can really manage, like the Ross Sea, really in-depth, long voyages. She has the capability to do that. Of course, two helicopters, which is a special thing to have in the Antarctic specifically. So lots and lots of potential. I hope she will go on some of these long voyages to the Antarctic.
And John, you spent quite a lot of time in the South Pacific, and I know you really rate it as a destination. Where in particular do you think really offers that sense of adventure, but in a tropical setting?
Wow. Well, that's a tough question. I think that probably at the top of my list would be Tonga and Vanuatu. Tonga is a very, very special destination. It's when you jump in the water with a humpback whale and its baby that was born yesterday, and you swim along with them, that is one heck of an experience. And fortunately enough, we've been able to visit Tonga on many occasions, and having the ability to also fish the area, which the owner of the Dorothea is a huge fishing enthusiast. A morning would be spent swimming with a humpback whale and her babies, and the afternoon is spent catching blue marlin. And that is a special day. And it's a day that we've been able to repeat many times over and over again. And lucky to have done so. Vanuatu is also an amazing destination. It's a chain of islands that runs north and south. It starts in the southernmost island with a volcano that you can literally anchor next to. And you can spend a week to 10 days cruising a chain of islands that is it's difficult to explain. And the culture is still intact. It hasn't been influenced by Westerners. It hasn't been, you don't have McDonald's and Burger King on every corner, but you still have infrastructure that allows you to get from Australia and Fiji in relatively convenient ways, and allows you to cruise an area that is still extremely unique. But the South Pacific itself is, we've done the trip 5 times, and there's a lifetime. It's from Galapagos all the way to the east coast of Australia, and Galapagos in itself is, we've done 2 complete circumnavigations of all of the islands within the Galapagos, and we've done 4 trips to the Galapagos. It's unbelievable. So it's hard to say for sure, but it's, yeah, a lot of possibilities.
And Tim, I know we've spoken in the past about Papua New Guinea and what that has to offer as a destination. Are you seeing much interest there at the moment?
Yeah, there was some nice pictures of Papua New Guinea on the screen. I saw it. But yeah. I mean, all of Melanesia, talk about Vanuatu, Solomons, and Papua New Guinea, I think, is kind of the pinnacle of that, in that it is a destination that has absolutely everything in terms of beautiful beaches, amazing wildlife, the culture. Few places in the world will you find such an authentic and raw cultural experience. And then you've got World War II history, amazing diving, shipwrecks. So Papua New Guinea is a fantastic place to go. Not without its challenges. I mean, it is really an expedition destination, because without local knowledge and understanding the dynamics of the place, you can find yourself misstepping. But with the right local knowledge, it offers an amazing experience. And yeah, it's a long way to travel, but as a charter destination, I think it has great potential.
And Sasha, are you seeing much interest kind of in the South Pacific generally, in that part of the world? Or do you think the border closures, you know, in New Zealand still and Australia, are still kind of putting some people off heading in that direction?
No, actually, we had a lot of demand that was put on hold. We had to reschedule a few things, of course. But South Pacific is back up. We've just booked a 5-week charter on a smaller sailing yacht. So just goes to show they don't all have to be like octopus to go off and explore. But no, we've also had seen demand in other destinations that we haven't really looked at fully before, like Madagascar. And all of these things are very exciting because, you know, this is for us what yachting's about. It's the ability to go places that are otherwise unattainable.
Have you managed to take Madagascar off?
We have not. No, we haven't. We haven't done much in the Indian Ocean. It's a place that maybe someday.
Tim, I know you're an advocate for Madagascar as well as a potential for the future.
I love Madagascar. Yeah, it's a super interesting place. But the challenge when yachts visit, and yachts do go to Madagascar, but they tend to be concentrated in a very small part of this country. I mean, it's over 800 nautical miles long, and it's almost a continent in itself to discover. So yeah, experiencing the whole, everything it has to offer is very, very challenging. So, but I absolutely love it. So Madagascar's great.
And another destination that I want to discuss with you, John, is you obviously spent time in Brazil with Dorothea. How was that as an experience? I know it came with some challenges, but was it worth it?
Brazil is definitely worth it. We left the Cape Verde Islands, and we went from Cape Verde down to Ascension, which is another story within itself. But you've probably said at some time in your life that you were in the middle of nowhere. If you didn't say that standing on Ascension Island, then you were lying. Ascension is the middle of nowhere. But from Ascension, we went to Rio, and it is. It's, you know, we were there the year after the Olympics, and there was still some infrastructure. There was two significant parts of Brazil for us. Number one, the fishing was amazing. We based ourselves out of Rio, and then we cruised the coast up to Búzios, and then south down along the Copacabana down to a region that escapes my mind for right now. But the two significant things for us was that part of the Dorothea program is that we have been philanthropic, and we did a charity event there for the local swimming clubs, and we really engaged with the locals and found that it was really just an amazing group of people, and the challenges that these children face just going from home to school to some sort of recreation just blew us away. They had an app on their phone that showed them the safe way to school without having to encounter some of the drug issues that plague some of these countries within South America, and to give back to some of the community was a special part of both Cape Verde for us and Rio, but Brazil as a whole, the culture, the people, it sort of gets plagued by, you know, being a dangerous destination, and there's an element of danger just about everywhere. Maybe not here in Monaco, but but in any of this cruising, there's always an element that that you have to be concerned about. The people and the vibe and how the general population behaved there was really refreshing, and I loved it. I thought it was great, and to be able to give back to the community in a very, very small way. We did a kind of a mirrored charity event in both Cape Verde and in Brazil, and people donated X amount of dollars for every blue marlin that we released. And we gave that money back to the destinations that we were visiting. And that was super rewarding. And it was a great destination.
And Tim, do you think generally South America has more potential? Do you think we'll see more yachts going there in the future?
I think so. I mean, it's obviously deployment planning is one of the big things you need to think about, and if you're going to go down to the Antarctic Peninsula, South America makes sense before and afterwards. I think Chilean fjords have great potential. More and more yachts are visiting that part of the world. I think you did as well.
Yeah, it was amazing to me that we cruised the coast of Argentina. We were the only yacht in the Patagonian season to check in to any place other than Ushuaia. So you have, I think there was nine yachts that visited Antarctica the year that we were there, and three came from the Pacific out of Panama. We were the only one to have actually cruised Argentina. I think that's the one thing that I see in present day yachting is the point A to point B. And I recently was interviewed for an article on Azores, and I would say 80% of the boats that cross from North America to the Med, right here, they blow right by Azores. It is amazing. And typically, they're blowing by it in the peak of cruising season. And the topography of Azores, if you don't want to go to the Marquesas, you can't be bothered with the Galapagos because that's too cool. The Azores is literally, you know, everybody has driven by it. And we were the second private yacht to have ever cruised the Azores, according to our agent that's been there since, I don't know how long he's been there. And we're driving around and you literally anchor out in front of the most beautiful island, and you go into a village that the people are, they think that they just saw, you know, fire for the first time because a yacht just pulled up and dropped anchor. Everyone, it's just an amazing experience. And you're thinking to yourself, well, 80% of the yachts that go to the Med drive by here every year, no one stops. It's crazy.
Have you ever had any inquiries for the Azores, Sasha?
Sadly not, but I was just thinking, you know, are you sure you want to let everyone in on your little secret? Because the thing is, you know, we've had in our experience some yachts and certainly going to destinations where we've really had to drive demand to the destination. We've had to work with the brokers to help them facilitate selling that destination, the logistics involved, what you can do there, familiarizing them. Somewhere like, for example, Raja Ampat in Indonesia, it was until COVID, of course, when they kind of closed the doors, but a very, very popular stomping ground. And it is going to be again very, very soon, but it needs that big push. It needs that big commercial push behind.
The issue that I see is that yachting destinations or charter destinations are sort of reverse engineered. It's brought in by the charter brokers and then once one person does it, it's kind of like the Northwest Passage thing that was happening 3 or 4 years ago by multiple boats, and then it sort of stopped for a variety of reasons. But
because it was closed.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, a couple, I guess Rose Hardy tried for a second time and then they got shut down. But yeah, I think that the curiosity is not as great as you would think it would be with boats that are more than capable. This isn't a hardware issue. It's not a, you know, we need to build boats for. Latitude proved it, as you had said. And Dorothea, you know, aside from the fact that it does have some commercial features to it, but before Dorothea, we were going around in a 107-foot, 40-year-old wooden boat. And we were in Southeast Asia and all over the place before anyone knew it was there, sort of. The point is that you've got to have the desire. You don't need anything. You know, Joshua Slocum wrote in a, what's that?
The time, you weren't constrained by time. Time is the most precious commodity. And when you're booking a charter.
We weren't constrained by an owner that wanted to push the envelope. Mm-hmm. He was still super busy in his work life. He figured out ways to get to the boat. But he never put constraints on us in terms of where we could or couldn't go, or where we couldn't go explore and then report back. That was the great part, because we got into a lot of trouble in various places that he avoided. And we figured our way out of, and then we moved on to the next, because we knew it wouldn't work for a variety of reasons. But it's the mindset, you know, that's it.
And this is why with the charter clients, I think if enough people have gone there and done it before, then they can safely say, okay, they've tested the waters. This is a safe bet for my 2 week precious time with my family. Whereas I think on private yachts, you have the luxury of time to really go and fully explore.
You do, but I would say that if you were looking at it as a whole, the charter yachts are setting the pace for some of the private yachts, because a lot of the private yachts just can't get out of the milk runs. They just can't get out of, and there's a lot of other elements that break into this, because, you know, I was fortunate enough to have done this with my wife, and we didn't care to go home because we didn't have one. And there's a lot of, there's a lot of those other logistics that play into it that you have to consider, both as a boat owner and somebody that wants to go to all of these destinations. They're great places to go, but they're a long ways from anything. And so if you've got another agenda of needing to get to somewhere, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
I was going to ask, are there any destinations where you wouldn't necessarily want to be taking clients right now, but maybe in 5-10 years you see the situation changing?
I mean, a place that was really magic to visit was Mozambique. And sadly, that's not possible at the moment, because that's a beautiful coast, but has security issues at the moment, sadly. But it, you know, we talk about new frontiers, and the owners have the luxury of time to go off and really explore a place in depth. But it's so hard to find genuinely new places now. I mean, I guess the polar regions are probably the only place in the world where you can have a chance of saying, I was the first vessel ever to anchor in this bay, or I was the first person to set foot right here, because there are new places being revealed by the ice, and so few people go there. But finding those new destinations is very, very challenging. I think what is changing is how those places can be experienced. And for sure, you don't need an expedition yacht to go to these places. We've seen that yachts yourselves and Archimedes, Rose Hardy, they've made some amazing voyages. But when you get there, what you can do depends on the equipment you have on board and the facilities of the yacht. So for example, the La Dacha will go to the Antarctic at the end of this month for the first time, Sea Explorer, first yacht with two helicopters available for charter in Antarctica. And that opens up a whole range of possibilities that you can get to places nobody else has ever been before. You can do things like heli skiing, not possible without a support vessel for a single helicopter operation. So submersibles, obviously opening up that whole new frontier of the deep, which is truly unexplored or relatively unexplored. So I think Octopus, of course, all of the above on board. So when you get there, what you actually do, what you experience will vary depending on the yacht. But I completely agree that most yachts can make it through the Northwest Passage to the Antarctic Peninsula with the right planning.
I'm conscious that the clock is ticking down, and I'm sure the audience have got plenty of questions for you. But before we hand it over to the audience, I was wondering whether each of you could say one destination that you think everyone in this room should be on their bucket list. Perhaps not Antarctica, somewhere else. I don't know who wants to go first.
I'd say it's still Papua New Guinea for me. I'm just fascinated to see how the people have been living there, and the wildlife, and just the remoteness. I think it's one place that's still really there's many places that capture my imagination, but that's top of the list.
I feel I should do a cold place. So I'll say Greenland, because it's relatively accessible. It's the world's largest island, and who doesn't love islands? And you can do so many different things there. The one side, you have real wilderness, polar bears, wildlife. The other side, you have quite good infrastructure. So it can accommodate all kinds of yachts, and there is endless potential.
I'm going to go with Vanuatu. It's still a culture that is intact, and it is definitely a unique destination, and it's something that you can do in relative ease. It's not a total science experiment to get there.
Great. So I'll now hand over to the audience if anyone's got any questions for you about some of the destinations we've discussed, or maybe some that we didn't manage to get to.
Hello? Okay. Yeah. My question to the captain is that do you do these travels the whole year round? The owners come with you the whole year round, or you split to like 3 months going back, not you as you are the captain, but the owners going back? What is not the common practice, but what do you think is the best way to do that? Because spending years and years inside in one boat, even if it's so big, I think it's not the easiest thing to do.
No, yeah. So just to make it clear, no, we would typically leave Florida for between 2.5 to 3.5 years and not come back, not have any. We would be on our own for a fairly long period of time. But depending on where we were in relationship to the United States would sort of dictate how long the owners or guests would come on board. Typically, our trips would be between 2.5 to 3 weeks, and then we would relocate to another area. They never traveled on the boat with us, so we relocated both Dorothea and our fishing boat from one region to another, set up, do a trip, and then move on from there. So they were not on board for more than, say, 3 weeks at a time. This wasn't something that they came on for and lived on the boat for a year or 2 years.
Thanks. And what is the biggest challenge you think it's traveling around the world with the owners?
well, yeah, it's, you know, over the years and in 20 plus years, you get to know somebody very well. Our challenge was always associated with how to get them in and out safely. They had a serious advertisement to smaller airplanes. So in some cases, that would make the logistics a little bit more difficult. But yeah, it was, I think the biggest challenges for us was getting two boats from one spot to the other spot. And likely in those scenarios, it was 4,000 miles of ocean in between. And so once we got there, we felt like our job was done. Whereas in most case of yachting, you know, the owner's coming and it's a big to do. Well, for us, the owner was coming, we were going fishing. So you know, on many occasions, you're looking at your watch saying we're only got this for another week or another 10 days, and you're hoping that they stay longer. That was the continuity between myself and the owners. And so, look, I've had a hell of a life, and I had a 20-something year job, and I never worked a day. So, yeah, pretty lucky. Logistically, it was getting them in, getting them out safely, and that was it. The rest was, it was good.
Massive thanks to Sophia, to Sasha, to Tim, and to John. Really interesting. Lots of places to do and see. It's fabulous. Thank you so much.
No, pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this week's Boat Briefing, which was mixed and produced by Grace Nielsen and is a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll see you next week.